Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Welcome to another episode of Acts of the Blood God and Independent RPG Podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. I'm just going to say it, Aurora Borealis, at this time of day, in this part of the country, localized entirely within, I don't know, it went pretty far south.
In Minnesota, apparently, because all
Toronto,
of my friends are showing...
Toronto.
I'm so jealous. I went to Iceland and I saw Aurora Borealis. I'm like, I'm so cool. And then people in Seattle and Minnesota got to see way cooler Aurora Borealis. So I'm super jealous.
Oh, you went to the origin point of Aurora Borealis practically, and everyone got better counterfeit Aurora Borealis than you. I'm sorry, Kat.
Yeah, I'm no longer cool. Sad.
You're
but
cool.
But who is cool? Is my other equally lovely co-host, Eric Van Allen.
I'm not cool. I am not cool. No. We're setting the record straight right now. I'm not cool whatsoever. Poe's cool.
Poe's neat. Poe's cool. So's two of us.
Yeah.
Eric is the coolest player on Final Fantasy XIV. Probably. I wouldn't know.
That's Mike.
So we did map night this night. I finally logged on because
map
I was broke
night.
And needed money. So we did map night, and I got some sick Archangel wings from the Excitatron.
Oh,
and
nice.
It really goes well with this like Hades-inspired glam that I have going for my Sage right now. So it's all coming together. So I do look really good in Final Fantasy XIV. That is true.
I'm happy to hear that.
Well, what else is coming together is this week's episode of Acts of the Blood God, in which, well... It was a busy and eventful week, and as usual, in kind of a bad way for the games industry, we'll be talking about everything that's been happening with Xbox, and specifically we'll be asking, should we be worried about Xbox's RPG studios? Maybe, but maybe not about the studios that you might be thinking. So look forward to that segment in just a moment. Before we get to that, though, if you enjoy the podcast... Well, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/bloodgodpod, where for just $1 a month, you can get the show ad-free and also access to our wonderful Discord, where you can hang out and talk about various RPGs that are now out. It's a great community. We do votes every month for the next Pantheon pick. And by the way, Pantheon of the Blood God, it's ongoing. And this month, we're playing 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. On the Nintendo Switch and the PS5. It's finally happening. I've been playing it. It's great. We record and stream every Saturday on Twitch at twitch.tv/bloodgodpod. Please like and subscribe. It's great to have you all here on a Saturday morning. And we're streaming games a lot more lately. I've been on last Wednesday, I streamed my This Week in GeckoCon run, and I'm going to be streaming it again at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, over on Twitch, twitch.tv/bloodgodpod, as I continue my run through Persona 3 Reload. I saw a bunch of you there. It was a lively little chat. Had a great time. So come check that out. And of course, follow us on all of the relevant channels. And if you want to access our old Pantheon episodes, they're available a la carte over on the Patreon. Okay, time for the main topic. This week, Xbox suddenly shuttered three studios and absorbed one. The two biggest names of them were Arkane Austin and Tango Game Works. Arkane Austin worked on Redfall, but they were maybe better known for working on Prey back in the day. Cult favorite, immersive sim. Tango Gameworks made Hi-Fi Rush, which just recently was an awards show darling. It was founded by Shinji Mikami, though Shinji Mikami departed back in 2023. It, I would say, caused an uproar in the games industry, and it raised a lot of questions about the state of Xbox. Specifically, what's the strategy going forward? Is Game Pass undercutting games? Is Game Pass a broken model? Where is all of this going? And more importantly, it raised a lot of questions about Xbox's other studios. Are any of them safe? And that goes maybe double for its RPG studios. So we're going to talk a little bit about the various Xbox RPG studios, talk about kind of where they're at. And we're going to talk a little bit more about where Xbox is and what's going on. It feels like they come up a lot, and we're going, why can't Xbox ever get its act together? Why do they keep stepping on rakes?
It's going to be this year.
What's going on?
It's going to be this year, next year.
It's still good. It's still good. It's
like waiting for the Leafs to win.
They've got like the best toys in the sandbox, and they can't put a castle together some days. It's like, I don't get what's going on. And yeah, this does make me a little concerned for some of the studios that maybe rely a little bit on, you know, some word of mouth, some critical darling attention. Your Obsidians, for example.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, what is safe these days? I think that's what's really driving people crazy. It's just like the rules are not sane anymore. I mean, capitalism was never really sane, but I mean, now it's completely insane, where you can have a studio, you can be working for someone who's making a nice profit, and usually the puzzle goes, okay, company good, doing good, people get paid, everything's happy. Now it's like, company doing good, you're fired. Who's going to pick up the slack? I don't know. I think people have this big idea that AI is going to replace everything all at once, and it's just not anywhere near that kind of state. It's very frightening, frankly.
A lot of it's also like, and keep in mind, I'm not like a super financial knowledgeable person, so
stonks.
This is just what I've heard from a lot of smarter people in the industry who talk about this stuff a lot. I'm going to shout out some places like GI Biz, some other podcasts like Remap Radio that talk about this stuff in great detail with great knowledge. But like, a lot of this also involves, there was a lot of spending in the pandemic, post-pandemic era, a lot of acquisitions because money was easy to spend then. And now it's not so easy to spend. There's a lot of belt tightening happening around the acquisitions that happened during that spree. But at the same time, as has been going around, it's Xbox might have a slight down curve. There's that video of Sarah Bond talking to Bloomberg, I believe.
Yeah, that was awkward.
Where she's talking about, just giving the worst quote you could have given about like why Tango and Arcane Austin were closed down. And it was about like, oh, creativity and delivering what we need and things like that. But there's some beautiful camera work and technical direction work to pull out and look at the graph above her that's of Xbox's gains. And you see like the meteoric rise in one period and then just like slight drop offs after that. And it's like, that's all that happened is line went a little bit
down. Slightly down. God forbid.
Yeah.
I watched Sarah Bond talking in that interview, and I kind of tilted my head a little bit, and I went, what if Xbox is just really bad at this?
I think they might be.
They've just made mistake after mistake after mistake. I mean, on paper, a lot of what they were doing seemed pretty smart 10 years ago when Phil Spencer was sketching out everything that they were going to be starting to do and starting to make all of these acquisitions. There's a video that's been passed around on X/Twitter, social media, whatever, of Sarah Bond and Phil Spencer talking about how Lionhead was shut down, an RPG studio, I might mention.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to make the same mistakes this time around. They had learned, and it was good, and here's why they had learned. And it's pretty apparent that they have not learned anything.
I think maybe one of the problems also, it's funny, this almost, I'm not saying the video game industry is going to crash, like it just not in the way it did in 1983, but it's almost the same kind of method of thinking that got us to that point in 83, where Atari was like, okay, we're going to make 12 million Pac-Man cartridges because there's don't know, 10 million Atari owners, every single one is going to buy a Pac-Man cartridge, and they're also going to buy systems. So that, you know, that's for the other 2 million. And of course, the game bombed alongside, they just overproduced. And in this case, like all these companies, Embracer Group as well, they're just gobbling up all these companies in hopes of like, oh, we're going to have this great Saudi deal. Oh, shit, it fell apart. Oh, you know, we're going to, Game Pass is going to like go up and up and up because games like Starfield are going to make people come on board. Didn't happen. So it's just same old corporate crap, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, if you look back at Xbox over the past several years, I mean, think about how they set themselves up for this generation and how they placed this huge bet on Halo Infinite. Halo Infinite was going to be their Call of Duty / Fortnite / whatever. And Halo Infinite was not good. They handed the keys off to a studio that obviously really struggled. The development was really fraught as a live service game. It was pretty poor and it fell off really hard. That, I mean, the developers did an okay job of bringing it back, but that sort of set the standard for what was going to come for the next few years. They did a terrible job of managing the release schedule. I mean, when they had to delay Starfield, which maybe was an inevitable thing given the scale of it, they had literally nothing to fall back on except a little game called Pentiment, which was actually pretty good. They have seemingly done a terrible job of managing the internal studios, even things like the comms teams, where there are multiple comms teams who are all kind of running into each other and bumbling around. It seems like Xbox bought all of these studios and had no idea how to integrate them into a coherent system. In short, to borrow a cliche, they really bit off a lot more than they could chew, it feels like, especially with the Activision Blizzard acquisition. Former senior PR person, Brad Hildebrand, who I knew from back in the day working on Mass Effect and the EA Sports games, he had a very long post on LinkedIn.
I read
talking
it.
Talking about everything that happened with Xbox. And what it boiled down to was they spent 60 some billion dollars to acquire Activision Blizzard. And when you spend that much money, Xbox goes from a rounding error on Microsoft's balance sheet to having the eye of Sauron upon them. And they're like, cut back now. And Phil Spencer in many ways is falling on his sword, but there were a lot of errors that were very avoidable with Xbox.
It really was. Go ahead, Eric.
No, you go. You're good.
I was just going to say, like, the acquisition is just, I don't know, I lost my train of thought. Go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
Well, so I was going to say something, and then I saw something in chat that is kind of immediately what I was going to bring up is, like, Lance Hart brings up spending $69 billion is $68.7 billion, and I always remember that because if you round it up, it is 69. Ha ha. Spending $68.7 billion on a purchase and not getting Call of Duty exclusivity sure was a choice.
Really was.
I think that reflects a lot of Xbox's changing mentality around this, like, world going forward, because here's the thing is, like, Xbox has spent a lot of money to keep losing the console war, right? I feel like at this point we can safely say that Xbox One did not win its generation and the Xbox Series consoles have not won their generation. Like, they're two gens down off of the high point that was the Xbox 360. I owned an Xbox 360 and an Xbox
One.
Did. I didn't buy an Xbox Series console.
It was
console.
A different time.
I just played ball on PC.
The 360 was a great console. I actually loved owning it. I played all of my third-party games on it. My playing third-party games on the PS3 felt like a bad experience compared to the 360. Mm-hmm. And now I barely turn on my Xbox. I don't know if I've turned on my Xbox this year.
I look at that and I see Xbox trying to maybe then say, okay, what about Game Pass? But not Game Pass as, like, this is where we put our quirky fun games. This is where we try to get our games onto other platforms. We just had the recent announcement that Xbox is, like, floating out its mobile store and stuff like that. It's Xbox's platform as the Windows program rather than the box that you have in your house. And so I'm curious to see where that goes. But you also look at how Xbox has had success in the last few years. And big success for Xbox is Fallout, is the Fallout TV show getting really, really big and then driving a bunch of people to play a game that was a failure at launch. Like Fallout 76 gets a second wind because of the Fallout TV show. That is a huge dub for Xbox.
Yeah.
And
that they had nothing to do with. They just got to soak it up a little bit.
Bethesda participated in the production of that. I don't know how much Todd Howard was doing on the set every day, but
Bethesda, the funny thing about Bethesda is, first of all, ZeniMax is kind of technically a different company from Xbox. It's not technically in the Xbox Game Studios system. A lot of the people there aren't full employees at Xbox. It's just they've been allowed to do their own thing. And, you know, it seems like everything that Xbox itself touches kind of goes bad. They've just really mismanaged their studio system, the Xbox Game Studios.
I think you are onto something when you say they had a whole bunch of people and no idea like how to coherently put it together, because they thought we throw money at developers and they make things happen. But let's face it, most of us creatives are really scatterbrained and addle-minded, and we need that leadership to tell us what to do and where to go. And maybe Xbox was lacking that. Maybe everything's chaos in there. Just, you can't throw a bunch of creatives into a room and expect miracles. Well, you can. It'd be really weird.
And it's like dev costs are getting higher. AAA development takes longer than it really ever has. And again, sorry, Lansard, I know I keep responding to the stuff you say in chat, but you're giving me good discussion prompts, so keep going. You bring up, wouldn't Microsoft have preferred having a new game in the works rather than Starfield and the Elder Scrolls 6? I would say that Starfield was kind of a right time, right place situation, because right now, a lot of companies are probably looking at new IP is scary. New IP is potentially dangerous if it's not going to take off. It's a lot of money to make new IP versus the Elder Scrolls will sell on name alone. Fallout could sell on name alone. Like, there are things that you look at. There are maybe some studios out there that could pull off doing like big new IP, big risk. But that's what Larian and FromSoft. And even then, like, you're kind of going like, oh, this is FromSoft making their new Souls game. It's just called Elden Ring, but
yeah,
it's in the Souls lineage, versus like I think the IP is the big hit for Xbox, and that's why we're seeing this condensation, the way that everything is condensing down into what Xbox thinks it can make money on. But also I brought up Fallout and I brought up all this like big IP focus and all that because it picked up Activision Blizzard, and that is a company that I feel has famously flubbed its attempts at building its IP outside of the games itself. Like, Overwatch never caught the TV show it should have gotten, frankly.
Yeah.
The fact that Arcane came around and got to that beat before Overwatch ever did is kind of bonkers to me. The Warcraft movie, famously controversial. You look at this company that does have a lot of recognizable IP, but is honestly done pretty poorly by it over the last 5 to 6 years,
which is too bad.
Even is Call of Duty anymore? They've got,
it's Warzone.
Looked at their promotions recently,
it's just shooting
Cheech and Chong shooting literal joints at people in their promos.
It's popular, but I mean, Call of Duty doesn't really have a series identity. Like, it's just
Fortnite,
the
now
shooter.
Kind of military Fortnite.
I wouldn't even call it because Fortnite's identity is being the Family Guy cutaway of battle royales, right? Like, it's like, oh, hey, Lois, remember that time I dropped onto an island and Korra from The Legend of Avatar was there? Like, that's
Ball,
what Fortnite is.
Yeah,
it's pop culture. Like,
I do
want
to play just to
pop
wear
culture
the skins.
Vomit is the best description I've ever heard of Fortnite. Thank you for that.
And I like it. I personally like it for that, because there is something appealing about that hyper maximalist like brand saturation that does just make my brain worm go burr.
It is kind of fun.
But like, it's, you look at Call of Duty and it tries to do that, but still the identity of Call of Duty is a bunch of dudes who get really sweaty and talk about skill-based matchmaking and play Warzone all day. And like, that's a different beast, and it makes money. It certainly makes money, but it's a different beast entirely, and certainly not a thing that you can go like, we're going to make the Call of Duty movie, like, good job, you made like American Sniper or something. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Like, you made 10,000 movies Call that we already have. Thank you.
Yeah.
It really begs the question, what is the end game for Xbox? What is going on with Game Pass? I think the reason that Tango Gameworks was such a shock to a lot of people was it was a seemingly healthy studio that had just put out a game that Xbox called successful by all of its metrics and won a bunch of awards and was a new IP and was generally considered to be a win in 2023 for Xbox, one of their handful of wins, and they just go and shutter it, seemingly because they went and pitched a sequel, and Xbox, which is currently in hardcore accounting mode, basically doing a giant audit. Well, this game is not going to hit the targets that we needed it to, and it's too expensive, and it's not going to come out next year. So we're not only not doing that, we're shutting you down.
Jesus.
And it's like,
that's escalated quickly.
That it did escalate quickly. And it just starts to beg the question of, like, what are you doing here? Where are you going with all of this?
At the very least,
all these assets, but you don't know how to manage them, seemingly.
At the very least, I thought that, too, like, Xbox had some kind of PR going on still, like, to shut down of all... that's so weird. Like, I can't... I know it's, like, just basically a hardcore accounting decision, but what a stupid hardcore accounting decision.
It's incredibly short term too, because you spend a lot of money on getting these studios that can be these creatives that can build these things up. I feel like on this podcast we've been talking a lot lately about how studios that build up over time and get good over a series of games continue to provide value, continue to produce games that people want to play.
Sure, Hi-Fi Rush 2 would be fantastic. They're a team that's experienced now. They have this IP. They have their models. They have their characters. They have their idea.
And it does necessitate a little bit of like taking a short-term financial, you know, halt to wait for that studio to produce that game that it's capable of producing. But ultimately, in the long term, it would then be beneficial, you would think. And that's the thing that I look at a lot of companies have been doing this amid all the layoffs. Every time we are focusing on what works for our brand. We are condensing down to our best thing. We're concentrating and focusing. Although some also like to throw in a little agile in there, you know, our team needs to be more agile. But really, it's a lot of stuff like EA gradually funneling everything into Battlefield. They're like, all chips on Battlefield, baby. That's the winner. Yeah, and FIFA to some extent, but like what is it, Ripple Effect, Criterion,
it's like five studios,
and that's what I see when I see like Roundhouse, which is one of the studios that was not closed but was basically absorbed by ZeniMax to what work on the Elder Scrolls Online, which, like, I don't know, maybe that has a Fallout 76. It's not a small game by any stretch of the imagination. There are a lot of people that play Elder Scrolls Online, but maybe it has some sort of Fallout 76 renaissance. Maybe they come out with the Elder Scrolls TV show
either.
In 2028
like
or something. But yeah, I look at this and I'm just like, it's a return to not just safety, but like the idea that if we keep putting money in the content pipeline, you know, the love of things like UGC, everybody wants that like set it and forget it thing, right?
Yeah.
Like that passive income money generator where you just keep putting skins out and keep putting stuff out and it'll throw money back at you, and that you don't have to like put too much work into it. You don't have to like make a new one and things like that. Cause making new game is expensive.
Which is funny because running a live service game is very hard and very expensive.
Yeah.
And even funnier is that the biggest breakout hit of the year is freaking Helldivers 2, a game that was made by a tiny studio in, what, Finland? I mean, they didn't need five studios to make this game. So, okay, let's talk about the actual RPG studios. So... Mm-hmm. Within the constellation of Xbox Studios, we have Obsidian, we have In Exile Entertainment, we have Playground Games, And of course we have Bethesda Game Studios, but they don't really count, right? I mean, I don't think they're shutting down Bethesda Game Studios anytime
Probably not.
Soon. Am I forgetting any? Like, those are all the ones right there, right?
So I wouldn't count Compulsion. They make like sim type
stuff. They make like We Happy Few, right?
Yeah, that's like an immersive sim, but we're not going to get into the is an imsim an RPG like we
don't. Playground Games is usually the Forza Horizon studio, but they're working on Fable, so I count them right now. So
they've been working on it for a long ass time too, and we've seen nothing of it.
Out of all of those, which ones would you say are relatively safe, and which ones would you say we should be very worried about? Should we be worried about all of them?
I mean, I'd be worried if I worked there right now. But
I would be worried if I worked there. But
I look at, okay, so in the very near term, like in the year 2024, I would be surprised if any of those studios are under immediate danger. But I don't know, don't rule anything out. But like,
yeah, no kidding.
I look at specifically Obsidian, who is going to release Avowed theoretically, potentially, and that's a lot of pressure on that studio now, because they have seen that if you are Tango and you put out a game and it gets awards and it does well, you can still be closed. And if you are Arcane Austin, who put out two very incredible games and then had one slip up that they were actively working to fix, you can still be closed. So the metrics for what success looks like and for what safety looks like are not exactly clear. And so if I was that studio releasing that game in the near future, I'd be very concerned about what metric is being used to judge whether that release is successful and whether my studio gets to stay open or not. So that's why I say I'm a little worried for Obsidian, because they don't really have a good measuring stick for like what safe is at this moment, for what success is, because they've seen two studios shut down over very different criteria.
I think that if anyone's safe, and as Eric said, nobody's safe, but if anyone's safe, I think Playground, just because they are also the Forza people. And I'm not going to say Forza's like, you know, they're Microsoft's FIFA or anything like that, but they do lean on that franchise quite a bit, and I can't really see them just disposing of them. But who knows at this point?
I went into this going, oh my God, I'm so worried about Obsidian right now. And after kind of going through all of the different studios, I think actually Obsidian might be okay. I mean, next week, who knows? Maybe I'll wake up to Obsidian shuttered as part of like Xbox shutdowns and all that. But Obsidian has maybe one game that might keep it relatively safe. It's a little game called Grounded, which I keep forgetting about, because the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids survival game is not necessarily for me, but it was maybe more successful than I could have ever expected. Did like 15 million players back as of like December 2023, which is not nothing.
That's not bad. Yeah.
No, it's good. Quite good. So many games come and go, just with absolutely nobody, but Grounded just keeps trucking along. It just came out on PlayStation and Switch, which all of the Xbox fans are complaining about, but let's be real, getting that game on more platforms can only be good for Obsidian and Xbox. Yeah.
At this point, why not?
They're coming off Pentiment, which was a critical darling and seemingly made on kind of a small budget as a passion project from Josh Sawyer. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me that if Avowed doesn't do as well as you would hope this fall, which I don't think Avowed is going to be that good, but we'll see. It seems like they might have a little more runway than we kind of anticipated, which is kind of making me like do a sigh of relief having put together these notes and everything.
Yeah, my concern is that like In Exile is a really dangerous position, because like they are the studio that's working on the big budget game that seems a little bit far off. But I think overall, even if none of these actual studios or projects are in danger, there's still a risk of just layoffs slashing into these companies and hitting them in ways that are not, they're not quite so tangible as like, okay, Tango Gameworks is shut down. It's gone. It's toasted. It's sent out to sea. It went to the farm upstate. Another analogy here. But there's other ways that these teams can get hit that have short and long-term ramifications. And one would still be if there's more layoffs. So we don't know. Like, yeah. That's been the weird thing about this year too, is that like every time I think, okay, maybe now everyone has made their cuts, like after the first round of cuts at Xbox and Activision Blizzard, the one that is in January, I believe, that was like 1900 jobs, I was like, okay, they did theirs for the year, like everyone's doing theirs, and then we're gonna move on, and now we have another round. And so every time I think the layoffs are going to end in this industry, they don't, they keep going. So yeah. That's another way that these teams get hurt in less visible ways, less obvious ways.
Yeah, it's a real drag. One of the less publicized stories this week that I learned about, because I know someone who almost went to work there, was Lightforge Games being suspending development because they weren't able to get enough funding.
Yeah.
And they were a studio that got a lot of funding during the pandemic, during kind of COVID-y times, 2021, thereabouts, when the industry was very flush with money and everybody was getting money to do their own little passion project startup. They were working on kind of a tabletop game, sort of like online D&D, but with Minecraft elements. I don't really understand the elevator pitch there, but it sounds like it was kind of fun and creative and interesting. It would have probably taken a lot of work and a lot of money to actually run. They made like $15 million right out of the gate, and then they weren't able to raise any more money to keep making games. And this is happening with a lot of studios. They are not the first to have to suspend development. Studios that were successful with other games have had to suspend development as well. So it's a really fraught time out there, no doubt. And there are a lot of changes happening around a lot of other studios. You were mentioning Playground Games, Nadia. That's an interesting one because they've actually undergone a lot of changes.
Oh, really?
Internally. Yeah. So their co-founder left, like a large number of people who specifically worked on Forza Horizon.
Oh.
Which is genuinely one of Xbox's most successful games on a regular, consistent basis. IGN.com gave Forza Horizon 5 Game of the Year, I think, in 2021, for example. The car game. It's a great game.
It's a good game. It's fun.
I don't even like racing games, and I enjoy zooming around
the cars
in that game.
Right,
yeah, it's a good game. But they're working on Fable. Low-key, Fable lost its narrative lead in 2023.
Right.
It's quietly lost kind of high-level people. We haven't really seen anything except a trailer. I think the trailer was in-game.
It was a CG. Was it in-game? I thought it was a CG trailer.
Was it CG or in-game? It was a trailer.
Yeah, but we haven't seen many since.
Yeah. So you kind of go, I hope Fable's okay. But you start to wonder what is happening with Playground Games and where is this studio going?
I don't think there's any way they shut Fable down again, though, because they already stopped it once with the asymmetrical game. Yeah.
I think they'll release it.
It's just what state does it arrive in? Like, does it arrive like fully formed and fully thought out? Or
for established franchises, it's like, what's the new Fable going to look like? I don't know. Just
question mark.
So uncertain what our favorite properties are, what the status of them are now.
But I mean, I feel like this is maybe not Xbox RPG related, but it is RPG related. Like a lot of, you were talking earlier, Kat, about publishing money running out, and I can attest to both, like, publicly I've heard this, you know, GDC talks and stuff like that, and then also privately speaking to developers, Xbox Game Pass was a pretty, like, interesting new form of publishing money for indie studios, third party studios that were trying to get funded, that were trying to get stuff across. It was like getting a Game Pass deal could, you know, finish out your last 2 years of development, you know, give you the cash you needed to see that stuff through. And Game Pass also had a lot of really cool RPGs hitting that platform pretty regularly. I would not be surprised in the wake of this to see fewer Game Pass deals for smaller companies if they are really trying to tighten the budget around there, if they're trying to think about what is Game Pass for us. And I know, Poe, you really are sad about that. You were hoping for that Game Pass money.
Aww.
But like that also, you know, it has a knock-on effect. It has a ripple effect where all of the money drying up does start to shrink other areas that were not in play before that you wouldn't even think about before. So this does affect not just Xbox studios, but a lot of RPG studios.
It makes me wonder how much they were told to cut.
Who can say? There was a story earlier this year about the Game Pass money running out. And publishers just because Xbox was heavily subsidizing a lot of games to come over, put their game on the platform. And for some studios, like, for example, Sega with the Yakuza games, they have all of these existing games. They got a nice little bag of money to put all their games on there. And it's like, well, this is great additional income. Thank you, Xbox. Appreciate you. And the goal was just to grow and grow and grow. Now growth has sort of stalled out. There's talk of apparently internal debate within Xbox about raising prices again on Xbox Game Pass Ultimate.
And whether Call of Duty is going to hit that platform too.
And there's a kind of unfortunate effect of game comes out on Game Pass. It necessarily cannibalizes the sales for some games. People play it and then they just leave and they go away, and like engagement just kind of craters. And it sets sort of weird habits and weird expectations. Indie games on Xbox are like a waste of time. I've talked to indie developers who have talked about having games released on Xbox literally in the double digits of sales or views.
That's where pretty sad.
Because if it's not on Xbox, people don't care. It doesn't, and it's irrelevant.
And Steam is like where a lot of people still go for that. Like Steam is where a lot of people still go for stuff. I still buy games that are on Game Pass. I buy them on Steam because I want to own them and I want them on my Steam Deck, which is like another factor in all this. I know I could do Xbox Game Pass through Steam Deck. It's just kind of a hassle. But that's also like a broader point I want to point out is that we had some discussions in the Blood God Discord this week about like the state of games hardware moving forward. And I brought up part of my beliefs, which is that I think devices like the Steam Deck, even the Switch 2, are going to kind of start to rapidly shift the way we think about console hardware, because now you have PC power and handheld that's portable that you can plug into your TV that you can take around with you. I was watching TikTok last night, random aside, but there was a it was some TikTok about like a dude moving out of his college dorm or something like that, like packing up all his gaming PC and like feeling really wistful about the end of the year, and half the comments were like, bro, why you got a whole gaming PC set up under there? We got Switch Decks now and stuff like that. Switch Decks, Steam Decks, which I thought was funny. But then I was like, huh, even the youngins are into the Steam Deck, huh? They're into that stuff. And I'm curious how that shifts it, because You bring up Game Pass, Kat, and like the lack of engagement. And I look at that. I look at other streaming services, which are like the direct comparison subscription services. So I have like Spotify, so I can listen to my music on airplanes, so I can listen offline. Or people have Netflix and they can download their Netflix shows before they travel. They have all these ability to watch the things they want to watch, where they want to watch it. That's what the subscription really gets you, alongside access to the library. And Game Pass is like, it offers some of that, but I feel like it hasn't reached that level of permeation where it it feels as adopted and useful as a Netflix sub or a Spotify sub. And maybe it could do that in the future if Steam Deck becomes more adopted, even if Game Pass somehow makes it onto a Switch or something like that. That would be the real home run. But like right now, it doesn't really offer me any of the things I want. And the selection, if it's only going to shrink from here on out, becomes like game number go down and price go up. I don't see how that works for me as like a tempting offer to want to keep my sub.
Mm-hmm. A Game Pass is... Well, what happened with the Steam Deck is such a great example of how the future is not written, or we don't know what we're going to be, what to expect. Because 10 years ago, I never would have expected that dedicated handhelds would be kind of all the rage, because it seemed inevitable that mobile games were just going to overtake and make the concept of a dedicated handheld sort of obsolete. So that's why I was kind of worried about the Nintendo Switch once upon a time, because
I remember that.
It felt like Nintendo was putting all of its chips down on a dedicated handheld, and it felt like Nintendo was being squeezed more and more between not being powerful enough to be a console, but also being kind of having its lunch eaten by mobile. And actually, it worked great. So what do I know?
Exactly.
Well, it's wild because like I don't think anyone could have predicted how well the Switch would turn out, like how effective it was, how like good of a console it was. Again, we talked
cheap,
at some point about
lots of games,
lots
Nintendo?
Of games.
Well, not a lot of games it launched, but it had the killer app.
It had
Breath of the
Odyssey.
Wild.
It had Mario Odyssey and launch. Breath of the Wild and Splatoon too, man.
It had a good
Breath of the Wild
year.
Was at launch, but its launch day, I remember this specifically, was like Breath of the Wild 1-2 Switch and Snipperclips. And that's why Snipperclips got huge, was because people wanted something to play that wasn't 1-2 Switch or Breath of the Wild.
Did it get Stardew Valley that year, or did it not?
Yeah.
Was that next
year? I don't remember
year?
When they got the port.
It had a really great launch year, like I said. Like, they showed off what was coming. Like, hey,
here's
Mario Odyssey.
We talked a bit about how indie games really filled the gaps for the Switch between... Mm. That was like the fix that Nintendo had always struggled with, was they had incredible first party games, but anything between that, third parties weren't putting games on it, so it was so dry. And then all the indie games came over, and then
they
it was
got
like,
some.
Yeah, it was a real indie renaissance.
Indies and even like their third party partners, like I think Octopath, even though I kind of like think Octopath Traveler 1 was pretty like. Medium of the road, like it was fine. Medium of the road, middle of the road. I think it was like a fine game, capital F fine, but like it was the thing that Switch needed at that point. And then you get things like Dragon Quest XI S on there, and now you've got like one of arguably the best RPGs around right now on Switch with this like brand new shiny version and all that. And you start to see the third party partners react to the Switch's immediate year one success and go, oh hey, this is not the Wii U. This is more like, this is the successor to the 3DS, like the good stuff, and not the Wii U, the not good stuff, even though it was carrying over a lot of those ideas of the Wii U.
Yeah.
But I bring all that up because where does Xbox go with hardware now? I feel like, you know, they were out there talking about, we're making the most powerful console yet, we're doing it and stuff like that, but
it's going to be powered by AI.
Yeah, if they're not going to have a lot of first party games at this point, and a lot of them are going to other platforms and stuff,
Well, I'm going to tell you what they're doing, Eric. They're going to release a dedicated handheld.
Yeah.
Probably this fall. And it's going to be a Game Pass machine. And if they can get Steam and Game Pass on it right out of the box, that's actually a pretty compelling device.
Yeah.
I have to say.
I'd buy it.
I would probably. Assuming they got the hardware right and the battery life right.
Right.
It's not a given. Xbox doesn't have the best track record with hardware, I should mention. Mm-hmm. And the first generation versions of these devices tend to be pretty rough. But a Game Pass machine that can also play Steam games makes a lot of sense. It's entering an increasingly crowded market. But in the short term, that's where they're going with hardware, I think.
It's a crowded market, but it's pretty dominated by Steam just by like name alone at this point. Like a lot of the other people in there are hardware manufacturers. I know the ROG Ally has its defenders, and I've heard really good things about it. But I do think there's space for an Xbox deck to come out and like really swing things and swing for the fences. I mean, I feel like that's what Sony maybe could have tried. And then they made the PlayStation Portal, which is just a DualSense with a phone in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's so weird.
And I have to wonder, like, looking at that, I was like, I wonder if Sony is also concerned about the future and hardware stuff and whether this whole handheld thing is going to stick around. But it does, if we do go that direction and that becomes like a big focus, maybe not the focus, like I'm not going to throw my PS5 out the window because the PlayStation Portal can stream stuff now, but like it makes me wonder, okay, Xbox exclusives are not really that exclusive anymore. Are they then concerned about just getting Game Pass everywhere that they can get it and then having those really big games that go like, you could spend $70, excuse me, you could spend $70 or you can pay us a little bit of money this month for Starfield and then you're going to get other stuff too. Like, is that kind of the play from here on out as they try to push Game Pass and maybe still trickle out hardware, but like, the service and the games and the platform becomes more of the focus. I don't know, but
maybe
I am really curious about where this goes.
I've heard suggestions that maybe Game Pass will change things so that the day one games are only available at the ultimate tier. And right. The other tiers you have to be up there. And maybe that will,
so it's like PS Plus then in a way.
Stop the cannibalization a little bit. They have to be sweating a little bit about the decision to put Call of Duty on Game Pass, because that was always sort of the implicit promise that Call of Duty and WoW on Game Pass. But if you put Call of Duty on Game Pass, that's a lot of sales you're losing if you're doing it day one. So what do you do? It's almost like Xbox has kind of painted itself into a corner with this, where they had high level vision of going, well, we could be the Netflix of games. Oh, wait, games are really different from entertainment. This is kind of a problem here.
Also, streaming services are just suck right now. They all suck. They're all terrible. They're just going back to cable. It's funny. Everyone's just kind of merging back into cable.
Yeah, everything is just becoming cable again, but worse.
We can talk about this in the tavern segment because I would like to follow up on this. But I'm almost at the end of the Fallout show now. And I keep getting ads and stuff now where I used to not get ads watching shows on Prime and all that. And it's terrible. Oh, yeah. I hate it.
Welcome to 2020.
I don't like our future.
I don't like our future either. And I don't like Xbox's future. But, well, in the short term, they've got a lot of problems to work out. Longer term, who knows? The games industry is changing quite a bit. But it's been another bad week for Xbox. I just hope that ultimately their RPG studios end up being okay. Fingers crossed and things like that. But all right, that's it for the main segment. It's time for a series of random encounters.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 €. Und außerdem Emmy Raclette Scheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 €. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Geschenke, mit denen niemand rechnet. Bis zum 26.12. in deiner Rewe-App. Einfach täglich öffnen und Coupons und Gewinnchancen sichern.
Rewe. Dein Markt.
Hades 2 is officially out of early access. It's out now over on Steam. Super Mario RPG Remake has sold 3.31 million units as part of Nintendo's earnings. That also included a little Q&A with Furukawa, the Nintendo president, where he said that they would be announcing, I believe they said they were going to announce the Nintendo Switch 2 in the fiscal year, but we couldn't expect it in the fiscal
year.
So
stop,
don't expect it
us.
Before. Please don't expect it before April 2025, in short. So Destiny 2, Shadowkeep, Beyond Light, and Witch Queen are all free for all players until June 3. We're actually coming up on the release of SMT 5 Vengeance, and there's some fresh info, including three new demons. It'll be out June 14th. Eric, did you get a chance to play SMT5 Vengeance yet?
No. I've only played a base SMT5. I was not part of that preview cycle that happened.
My friend Shannon actually went to that preview event. I was actually in New York when it was happening, but I didn't make it out there. I was like, go see SMT5. That's okay. I'll be fine. The Witcher 3 mod editor is getting an official Steam release this month. It's very exciting for Witcher 3 fans. EA has two unannounced games this year, and spoiler alert, one is Dragon Age Dreadwolf. Stray Gods Orpheus is a brand new story DLC launching June 27th. And finally, another Fallout 4 graphics update is coming to all platforms next week. Next week should be a pretty eventful week because we're going to have a lot more earnings. It's going to be mostly on the event side or on the entertainment side, but please look forward to that. But all right, we're rolling into the tavern here to talk about what we've been playing, what we've been doing. Nadia and Eric, you've been playing the new hot game, which is not an RPG, but everybody's been talking about a little game called Animal Well.
Mm-hmm. There's animals and a well. There's animals
well,
and a well.
Animal.
Well, well, well. If it isn't the animals.
Well, well, well.
Playhouse of the Rising Sun. It's a, yeah, it's a really cute game. I'm really enjoying it. We were talking a little bit about it before the show, and it is kind of a puzzle platformer that is, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like I was saying, I'm not someone who likes puzzles. They make my brain cook. But something about the puzzles in Animal Well are just so clever that I can't help but be impressed by them. And I'm just like, oh, I feel good solving this. I'm a good monkey for solving this. Thank you.
Yeah, you basically play as this little slime blob.
I think you're supposed to be a seed or something.
I think you're supposed to be a seed, but he reminds me of like almost a drop of dew with like feet that walks around.
He's very cute.
And you can pick up different items. And I feel like it's somewhere in between Fez and maybe like La Mulana or something like that, where it's very exploration heavy. There's a map that you have kind of cells and kind of a grid to explore, very Metroid-y in that way. But the actual things you're doing are jumping, platforming, puzzle solving in ways that remind me of your Fezzes and stuff like that. I finished it last night. It's a very short game. I beat it in about 5 hours. So that's the appeal here is twofold. One, you pick this game up, you support an independent dev, Billy Basso has been working on this for years, famously picked up and published by Big Mode, which is a YouTuber Donkey's publishing label. So congrats on a big debut title for that outlet and for that firm. But
he's one for one.
Yeah.
Gotta give him
love
credit.
To start out batting home runs. But I really do think it's an interesting game because I told you, like, it's short. It's beatable. You can see the credits in like 5 hours. I don't think any part of it is too difficult. I do think there's like some tight platforming in areas, but it is very doable. It's not going to feel like a splatformer the way that like Super Meat Boy or Celeste does.
Splatformer? I've never heard of it.
You never heard that term? The splat?
No, I've never heard the splatformer.
I love that. Yeah. It's inspired by Super Meat Boy, but
he splats.
Yeah, he does splat. But the deeper layer is where it gets very Fez-like because there are just clues and hints and puzzles and things to be found to dig deeper under the surface should you want to do that. And I think it's actually constructed very smartly in that if you just want to get a good platformer experience, you're going to get through it in 5 hours, have a good time. It's not a subpar experience in any way. And then if you want that deeper puzzle solving, like community effort level, that's in there too. And that stuff is very interesting to find. I found one aspect of it by accident and was kind of had that moment where I remember playing The Witness and having the first moment where I kind of like understood the second layer of that game and feeling like, oh, this changes so much. And now you're starting to see different rooms and different things that happen in a different way. There's that in this game. I know some people compared it to Outer Wilds. I don't know that I would outright do that because Outer Wilds puts that stuff, top level. Like, yeah. You are trying to solve mysteries and understand what is happening from the get-go. You can get through Animal Well with like a brain cell, just being like, hoppy, throw frisbee, use all the tools in this game are so much fun. The frisbee is the one that's pretty public, so I'll talk about that one. There are other tools that are, yeah, the little disc that you throw.
Yeah, I got that from a wolf, like a wolf's mouth, and a wolf started to chase me. I just kind of got scared and put it back.
Well, Nadia, maybe one should think about how you might acquire that disc without an angry wolf chasing you. But that's kind of the fun of this game, is Doggos. Like finding some of the stuff and then being very surprised by the way. It's also gorgeous. The pixel art is incredible.
Really nice.
Like, sincerely, some of the best pixel art I've seen in a long time. I think I'm going to say something controversial. I'm going to say something that might get some people mad at me. I think we might have gassed up HD 2D just a bit, because
really
I like
really
when it's applied really? Well. I like when it's applied well, but there are recent games that have all kind of hopped on the Octopath train that are doing the HD 2D, and they're like, it's pixel art, but we're shining like 14,000 god rays and blooms on it, and it's gonna just blow out any of the detail and like the expressiveness of these like chunky pixels. And Animal Well has a lot of really cool effects. I love the smoke effect when explosions go off and stuff like that. There's some really gorgeous effects, but they don't feel like they detract from how good like the actual chunkiness of that world is. Like, it's got a really compelling look that does not lose its pixel soul in the development of it. It does not wash it out with just a bunch of like light and stuff like that. There's actually really great lighting techniques used in some different areas that really give them all a sense of identity and character and wonder. It's just a genuinely incredible little game. I think it's like going to be one of the big hits of the year. I think it's going to be one of the ones that we're talking about when we get to the Game Awards and we're talking about like best independent game of the year. If this isn't on that list, then I need Jeff Keighley to step down. I need him to abdicate the throne. All right. Because this, I cannot imagine 5 other indie games better than this coming out. If that does happen, and I will eat crow then, because genuinely that will be a very good year. 5 games,
we give
5 better
Jeff
indie
Keighley
games
a lot of shit, but truly we are the villains. We, the press, are the ones who nominate the games and vote on them.
That is
so
true.
So when we chose Dave the Diver as best indie game, that was not Jeff Keighley. That was the press. The games press needs to look itself in the mirror and
realize. I haven't
realize
played Dave the Diver. I thought it was good.
Every time
no, it's,
we
it was
give
the, whole thing is
the
what,
Game
whether
Award
it was an
shit,
indie or not.
We are actually giving ourselves shit. Because we not taking these seriously enough.
We and ourselves is different because I didn't vote on that Game Awards.
Yeah,
so
I don't
I
vote
get,
anymore.
I get to
I'm
throw
out.
Peanuts from the peanut gallery now.
Same.
And I savor that ability. So
fair. I get to give myself shit because I was nominating games. But I try to do a good job.
No, when we nominated games at US Gamer, we were very thoughtful about it.
We were.
She meant we just yelled a lot.
We did.
We did argue a lot, and it was a lot of fun.
But Animal Well is like a really special little game. I think if you like puzzle platformers, it's really worth checking out. There are so many indie games that hit this week. Like I haven't even played enough to talk about it yet, but I started Thousand Times Resist last night, and that's kind of another one that's taking off. Little Kitty Big City is another one that a lot of people are talking about, and then we'll probably talk about another one here in a second. Like Hades 2 is in early access. There are so many big indies out right now that feels like they're kind of carrying the conversation in the absence of major AAAs, which is weird because we're not that far out from Dragon's Dogma 2 and Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. You would think that those would still be in the conversation, but it feels like, honestly, indies and then like Helldivers has been carrying a lot of this year so far.
Yeah, so indies, Helldivers, Pal World, I guess, but that kind of came and went. I'm trying to think of all the games that Manor Lords was pretty popular. It had like 3 million wish lists.
gray zone warfare was really big, I think is really big right now, just because the Tarkov devs came out and just like unloaded a magazine into their foot.
a little game called Balatro. And also
Balatro.
Unicorn Overlord.
Yes.
This June's going to be crazy, though. Between, there are like three major shows coming out between The Boys, Star Wars, and House of the Dragon Season 2. And we're also getting the Elden Ring DLC. And it's going to be the Summer of Gaming. I call it Summer of Gaming because I work for IGN. SGF and IGN Live and all that and all the showcases.
And Dawn Trail.
I feel tired just thinking about it, y'all. When is Dawn Trail?
Week after Elden Ring.
July 2nd. So I think early access is like a few days before that. So I think it's something like June 28th. I'm just spitballing here, though.
Oh, I look forward to the Charlie and Dropouts coverage, our sister podcast that
it gonna
focuses
be good.
On Final Fantasy 14. Go check it out. Charlie and Dropouts. And hey, we have a whole channel dedicated to it now over on the Discord. You too.
You should come talk to us.
Kat, how much money would we have to raise in the next charity stream for you to live stream your journey through Final Fantasy 14?
Oh my God.
How much money? Put a number down.
Wasn't $20,000 like the impossible number last time?
That was the impossible. We got over 10K last year.
We got over 10K. If we get to $20,000, I promise, swear to God, cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, I will play all of Final Fantasy 14 and live stream what I can to get all the way through Dawn Trail. And I will be on Charlayne Dropouts and I will talk about my journey.
You can't skip story scenes.
Balls in your court, everyone.
I vow if we get to $20,000 at our charity stream, the Acts of Blood of God charity stream, I will do this thing.
We need the return of Cat Flyer, everyone.
This July, no date set yet, but probably sometime in mid-July.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes and ears open.
Look out for it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Hades 2? Because you had some thoughts about Hades 2.
I did. Yeah, let's talk about Hades 2. It's out now. It's out in early access. It's not hitting with me yet, but I don't think that means necessarily that Hades 2 is bad or anything, or that it has things to criticize. It's just different. So when I was playing the original Hades, it was very straightforward and easy to understand the stakes right out of the gate. So you had Zagreus, and he was trying to get out of Hades, and he didn't like Dad. And why is that? Well, you start to unravel the mysteries right from the start. And it was very satisfying to be waving that sword and getting powers and just trying to get as far as you can. Good times. Hades 2, first of all, I'm not really sure what the motivations are or who this character is necessarily. I guess I'm trying to get revenge on Kronos, the Titan. The mythology goes a little deeper this time around.
Yes.
And the systems are different. And I had a pretty good feel for what all of the different gods would kind of imbue so that I could build builds on the fly. And in Hades 2, I do not have a good feel at all for the individual builds at this moment in time. I'm still using the base spear. It seems like there's resource gathering or something to unlock more weapons. And I've twice now reached the first boss. Hecate, is that their name?
Hecate.
And I could like do no damage to them. And I was I got them halfway down in terms of health. And I'm like, wow, I'm like super weak. What's going on here? So I sort of feel like I'm figuring this out in a lot of ways, but Hades hit me really hard right from the start. And Hades 2 is kind of a work in progress for me a little bit.
Maybe a slow burn for you.
So the thing I've put probably about like 20 to 25 hours into the early access at this point. I've kind of hit the point where I'm probably going to drop it for a little bit and wait for story patches to arrive, because I can kind of tell that I'm hitting the point where it's like, okay, I've seen a lot of the story that's in there now. And if I trigger more stuff, it might be stuff that they don't have in yet or have not fully incorporated. So I'm just going to wait a little bit. I've gotten enough into this thing that I'm ready to like, wait for them to put out some of the, you know, like ending patches that they will eventually do and things like that. So for context, you are Melinoe, who is the princess of the underworld. I believe in Greek mythology, kind of the princess of nightmares. That's kind of like her aspect. She is into nightmares. She is within this canon, I believe in Greek myth canon to some way, some degree as well. The brother of Zagreus, the daughter of Hades and Persephone. So something has happened to the house of Hades. Kronos, who is the Titan of time, also the father of most of the gods and stuff within Greek mythology, who was famously killed, split into different pieces and scattered around Tartarus to prevent him from ever taking over again. He's back now. He's pissed. He's unhappy. So you something has happened up in the house of Hades, and you have been tasked with the very simple, repeatable moniker of death to Kronos. You are going down there to take revenge, to do something. What that entails, I'll let you discover, but I think I really vibe with this game because Kronos is a really compelling villain. The thing about Hades,
have I seen Kronos yet? I don't feel like I've seen Kronos at all.
Actually, no. Given what you told me about how far you've gotten, you've not seen Kronos yet. But
it's like Hades is the villain, and Hades is like right there being like a grumpy dad sitting on a throne, right? Yes. It's the name of the game. And yeah, so Kronos feels a little more nebulous to me, I suppose.
So Hades 1 was very much like, I hate you, Dad. I'm running out of this house.
I'm and listening back to Linkin
like,
Park.
Shut up, Dad. I'm going to get out next time. And like, it did have that more immediate this is what's going on, this is what's happening vibe, and I can see how that is a little bit more appealing. But what I will say about Hades 2 is I really like Kronos as a villain, because Kronos represents time, and time is a very like nebulous concept, but they end up using it to kind of represent like the inevitability of passage, that change will occur, that things will happen, and you cannot really control them or change them. You have to adapt to them. You have to survive through them. And I don't know, that's like a topic that's really hitting for me right now, that like time never stops and it will change things around you. And there is nothing you can do about that. There's absolutely no way to stop time. And I find that just really compelling. I think the way that a lot of those characters grapple with what has happened, there's a lot of familial stuff in the same way that Hades 1 had it, but I really enjoy, so you interact with a lot of the children of Nyx. So characters, granted Nyx has a lot of children, but
yeah.
There's like Moros, who is Doom incarnate. There is Nemesis, who is Retribution incarnate. All of these aspects of the night and suffering incarnate that you kind of interact with throughout the game that really end up being compelling characters, because they're all about generational expectations and family legacy and what you are supposed to do when you are the one that inherits the legacy that has been handed down to you. I just find a lot of that writing to be maybe not as overt as Hades 1, but really compelling in its own way. And I think the vibes of Hades 2 are also really interesting. They went for more of the witchy magic side of Greek mythology. A lot of like, you literally, your base is at the crossroads and you have a giant cauldron that you put stuff into to create incantations and bring about changes in the world, from stuffing a bunch of reagents like you know, different flowers and mushrooms into a cauldron and chanting around it. And like, that's a really cool vibe. Melinoe is a very different fighter from Zagreus. Zagreus is much more aggressive, much more in your face. He's kind of brash and bullheaded. So a lot of his stuff was like fists, shield, sword, F you, Dad, I'm getting out of here.
I don't know, a lot of like really great charge attacks, just like,
yeah. But Linoue is a much more, I find like I'm having to think about positioning more often and like being more intentional with the things I'm doing, because I used to be able to just kind of spam dash and hit attack and get through a lot of stuff. But Linoue has the magic bar, which can give her a lot of power, but you have to be positioned right. You have to use your abilities correctly. You have to think about the synergies in which they can work together. I had this great build where I had the sister blades, which are my favorite weapons. They have a special that throws a bunch of daggers, and it throws more that when you charge them up. And I had an aspect, or actually it was a Daedalus hammer, that made them throw more daggers and out in a fan around me. And my aspect made it so whoever was in my cast, my daggers would hone in on them. So I basically run into the enemies, drop my cast circle on the ground, dash out, charge my special, and then launch out this giant fan of knives that would then, like, in mech anime, when you see those mechs that like shoot out all those rockets that kind of funnel and circle around, and I think it's called like a rodeo missile attack or something.
The Macross missile circus.
Yeah, missile circus. That's what it's called. Yeah. I had a missile circus build, and then I upgraded it with Apollo, and all of his stuff is about like doing damage in AoE. So I was just launching missile circuses within this game, and like it was cool to see all of the boons interact in that way. Because honestly, Hades 1, I felt like it was just, I get the right aspect, I get the right boon. You know, I have my adamant rail with my Zeus chain lightning attack and my Athena dash, and I can get to the end of this game. Like, whatever else I get, I know I can like finish this game with just those three things. Whereas here, I'm having to be more intentional, think about what I'm doing, even consider elemental affinities, which are a new thing for the boons in this game, that like if you get certain numbers of certain elements, now they can add up to give you something later on if you get the right infusion. There's so many more like knobs and dials and switches to turn to power up Linoue, and I think that does make it confusing at first, and it does make it very easy to end up with a build that doesn't do anything. It also gives you a lot of ways to build something that can surprise you. And that's, I understand why some people are having a very different response to this game, but I do really like the ways in which Supergiant has expanded their thought process around what Hades is. And I'm glad it's not just, here's Hades 1 again. Like, I think they managed to get out of that. It does not feel like Hades 1 again. And in some ways that might rub some people wrong. I've seen some people not liking some of the later areas, the way you navigate them, because they're very different from typical Hades regions and things like that. But I think it works. I think it's interesting. And that's honestly what I want from Supergiant, is something interesting and compelling. And they managed to do that instead of just giving me Hades again. So I vibe with it, but I also understand why people do not vibe with it.
I'd take Hades again. Hades is pretty rad, actually. But I see all of your points, actually. And your description makes it understandable to me why it's harder for me, or it takes more work, I think, to get into it. Maybe there's a lot more nuance to the storytelling and the exploration, and most importantly, the systems. I think your points about Zagreus versus, what's her name again?
Melanoe.
Melanoe are well taken.
Or Melanoe.
Actually. Melanoe.
I was wondering about that.
Melanoe.
Melanoe.
Are well taken,
Melatonin.
Actually. Zagreus. His name is Zagreus, right? I'm not like sounding like an idiot.
No, it was Zagreus.
It's Zagreus.
Oh, thank God. He is very in your face. He's almost like a fighter, sword and board kind of guy. And Melanoe is maybe more of a rogue in some respects, when you were describing what was going on with the daggers and everything. And the positioning game made me think of much more of rogue classes and that kind of thing, or, you know, crowd control and such. I've had to think a lot about what our individual abilities do, and maybe I'm just ever so slightly frustrated, because when I got to the first boss, I felt like I was doing absolutely no damage. And so I'm having to completely reconfigure my brain as to what the actual good builds are on this. And I don't feel like I've gotten there yet. Where Hades, because it was so straightforward and so in your face, I felt like I got it immediately, and it was immediately compelling. So it's taking more work to dig into this one.
I think the tack on effect of like taking Hades 1, which had a very simple, understandable like rule set of like what you could do that was damage. So you have like attack, special, cast, and then your dash. That was a very like straightforward setup, and now they have basically doubled it in size, right. And also the things that you do with that, your attacks and specials in this game, I found are significantly more complicated than they were in Hades 1. I think some of the later weapons you get, like the Umbral Flames and the Argent Skull, are like a lot more complicated to use. Even yes. The Moon Axe has like a pretty complicated special that I still mess up routinely. And the cast is not this just like projectile the way Zag would just kind of like throw that little diamond thing out and be like, ha, do damage. Awesome. Instead, Malinoue has the like circle that she draws on the ground that can like do damage and then like holds people in place, which is very, very effective. It's so
big
good
crowd
at crowd
control thing. Yeah.
But it's like it's a very different play style because now you're not just throwing damage at people. You're kind of like planning on where they'll be and how you want them grouped and then how you take advantage of that. So I do think it's like a mindset shift. And I understand why like people might bounce off of this, because it does mean that you have, again, a lot more ways to build something that's effective, but a lot more ways to build something that is not. And I've definitely had runs where I'm just trying to get damage out. Like, I feel like I am doing no damage, and I get to like the third boss, who is very much like a big hunk of meat that you just gotta like beat down. And I'm like, this is going to take eons, whereas like if I mess up, like there's a death defiance, like boom, I'm out, there's a life. And it can feel a lot more punishing, I think, for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, it's still very early days, and we won't go into 1.0 until probably next year sometime. So I mean, Hades 1 was a very different game when it first came out compared to where it ultimately landed, so there'll be plenty of refinements. They'll keep working on it, but interesting analysis, Eric. I can kind of see where you're coming from with Hades 2.
I'm conflicted on whether I should play it, just because like I want to wait, but at the same time, people are spoiling story stuff left and right. So I just I'm just mute like, you know what? I know it's going to change, but I want to get in there.
There's a few aspects of this game that are going to be impossible to avoid. Like, I'm just sure. going to tell you, there are like some structural parts of this game that you would consider a spoiler that is going to be like very difficult to avoid going into 1.0. So that's why I said, like, if you have any interest or care in like not getting spoiled, I would at least play to a certain point in the Hades 2 early access, because it carries over. Like, they have said they're going to try and make sure that your save carries over, and also that like it will continue to develop. You will have that key. So if you know you're going to buy it down the road and you don't want to get spoiled right now, like there's enough road here to have a really good experience with Hades 2. And then hit a point like I did where I'm like, cool, I'm good. I've seen what I need to see. I'm going to move on. I'm going to wait for the next big patch or for the 1.0. Right. But there are definitely like certain things if you care a lot about, you might want to play now.
I think I will. It's just right now I'm in the middle of another game that I have to play for work. So, but once I'm done that, I probably will dive right into it, because I'm getting mad at Twitter, and I'm already mad enough at Twitter. I don't need more reasons to be mad at Twitter.
Oh, I took Kat's advice and have stopped using Twitter pretty much altogether at this
point.
Good
idea.
Outside of work
hours.
Get off this hell platform.
Mm-hmm.
You're on Blue Sky though, right?
Theoretically.
Yeah.
I use it. Like I post there all the time.
Every so often I post there. I like the vibes on my timeline a lot more.
It's a much more chill place.
Funnier. So there's an edge to X/Twitter. But Nadia, or sorry, Eric, you were talking about how you almost got to the end of the Fallout TV show, and that you had some thoughts on that front as well.
Oh, yeah, right. I won't take too long because I feel like I've occupied the tavern at this point. But
Eric is like sitting up next to the fire, taking it over.
He has the best seat. The bar's open. You're just looking sour at having to stop playing.
Fallout, I was right and wrong about it. Let me put it that way. That show gets better. That show does get much better after like the first two episodes. I would say it was around episode 4 or so that I started really caring about the show, mostly based off of, again, like, this is where I was right, the performances of Ella Purnell, Walton Goggins, like absolutely just owning their screen time. I think some of the other characters that get introduced down the line, I won't say their names and all that, but like some of the characters that get introduced, they just have very good actors, really good drama. And I think some of the stuff they do specifically around how the vaults came to be and stuff is very interesting, is very good, and stuff that would have been hard to explore in a video game, whereas like it works really well in a prestige TV show with Walton Goggins. Again, like he is really like carrying this show for me, because like I'm not vibing super hard with all of the Brotherhood Maximus stuff that was pretty like that was dragging for me
stuff.
Yeah,
because it's just
Private Joker.
I don't know. It's stuff that I kind of expect from a TV show, I guess, is like, here's somebody who was raised under a doctrine and really likes it, but now he's being faced with like cold hard truths about it. And like,
that's kind of a lot of those.
It's a lot of those characters, but I just found that like a lot of the beats, especially around Maximus and how his character evolves in the middle of the show, was not really doing much for me. It's starting to get a little bit better in the tail end, but I really find that like Ella Purnell, Walton Goggins, some of the characters in that past stuff that you see are really carrying the show for me. And then the antagonist, Moldaver, also very, very good. I find a lot of that vault stuff to be really effective and compelling, where I find some of the other stuff not quite so much. I thought it was funny how they have to explain what ghouls are, because that's such like an accepted thing in Fallout canon, but also
so
the
weird.
way they're portraying ghouls is very zombie like, and that kind of like weirds me out in a way. I know that there are feral ghouls in Fallout canon, but they have kind of done some stuff with the way they're introducing how ghouls operate and how they kind of like don't become feral, that I think is curious and makes them feel a little bit more like zombies and less like, I like the sort of, here's this old soul who has survived years in the wastelands and is just like super like does not care. Which Fallout is it that has that ghoul that has basically worked like every job and you can eventually convince him to become like a gunslinger again? I like that character a lot.
Is that Fallout 4's ghoul?
That might have been Fallout 4 school.
Yeah.
I really do like some of the stuff they're doing and what they're exploring in the Fallout canon with the show. So I was wrong in that regard, but I was also right in that like the big thing carrying a lot of the show is like Ella Purnell, Walton Goggins. Like they're incredible on screen. They're so good.
Yeah, go check out our review of the first couple episodes of the Fallout TV show from a few weeks ago. One of the nicer revelations maybe of this year. But as for me, I've been playing Persona 3 Reload and 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. 13 Sentinels, I still have really no clue what's going on.
You're not supposed to.
For a while.
It's like I'm unlocking these storylines as I go, and each one has just something completely different going on in it, and so it's kind of recalibrating. Oh, this girl's being chased by the Men in Black. Okay, cool. This girl's being told what to do by a talking cat who wants her to shoot people with a magic gun. Sure.
Yeah.
I love this guy, game so much.
This girl doesn't want to work for the narcs and is kind of a punk girl, and I actually really like her. She's cool. And so I'm trying to find a narrative through line. It's jumping all over the place in terms of the timeline. So you're in the school, and then you're actually fighting the monsters, and I'm like, how do I go from the school to getting everybody into the mechs? I'm wondering about that. The actual mech fights are a little bit like my eyes glaze over and watch things explode sort of way. Like they're they're fun, but you know, they're not amazing or anything. So I'm just kind of playing periodically and sort of going question mark, question mark, question mark, because I try to figure out what the heck is going on with this game. But
so
it comes
last
together.
Time we talked, you were really high on the combat and really low on the adventure stuff. Do you feel like that's tipping now, or?
I think I'm kind of mid on both, but it is a beautiful game. Packed full of mecha references, with interesting and noticeable characters, and I feel like there's a lot going on here. I'm just waiting for the dots to be connected and to get a sense of the stakes, because I think a lot of the excitement is around unraveling the mystery box, so to speak, and trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And that's not extremely compelling for me personally. I'm fine with just kind of rolling with the characters as they are, and I want to feel a sense of investment with the actual adventure, as opposed to being like, but what happens next? I gotta know. I need to be invested in the characters before I can be invested in the mystery, if that makes sense.
How many hours are you in, do you know?
Not that far.
Have you had any big aha moments yet, or maybe like WTF moments that just kind of like shocked you?
Shocked me? No, I wouldn't really say so. I've been slowly unlocking. Okay. I don't want to like spoil things really for people who are playing it.
Oh, you don't want to spoil things. Okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, it's like super early on. Yeah. The talking cat thing with the magic gun was kind of making me go,
it's so good.
It's a good plot beat. It's an effective plot beat. It reminds me a lot of Madoka Magica for some reason, like the Cube and all that. Like, yeah. God, my talking cat says I need to pop a cap in your ass right now. So
hold on to court. No judge will convict you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm watching a story unfold, and there's not a ton of actual interactivity with this game. I'm picking a chapter. I'm walking around, talking to characters, watching how things play out a little bit. So in a lot of ways, I'm a passenger in this game.
That's fair.
So I'm not feeling a ton of agency at this moment in time, but it's a cool kind of strategy visual novel thing.
Have you acquired Yakisoba Pan yet?
Yakisoba Pan Angel.
I think I did. But
that game makes me hungry every time I think about
it. I've never tried it.
Sounds so good.
I mean, I love yakisoba. It's a good festival food.
That and considering hamburger is so good.
But I know that there are a lot of people who are super invested in it. There's a thread going on in our monthly game club, and I saw somebody post a wall of spoiler text.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, I think
you have to finish it for the Pantheon. I know
it's the law. I do think that it is gorgeous and substantially more beautiful than Unicorn Overlord, which I thought was a good looking game. I love the painterly look to it. It's always sunset in this game. It's always this kind of golden sunset happening, the end of the school day.
That there are different scenarios, like you go to just the same places at different times of the day, and I just know there's one scene in some cityscape where you see like it's nighttime and there's a couple of really drunk Japanese businessmen like collapsing on each other on a bench. And just full of details like that. Like, I see Eric laughing because you remember it now.
Yeah. I almost want to draw a line to Boku no Natsu Yasumi, because it's like got kind of that same love for the golden hour and like the way that the sun moves. It sounds really cheesy, but like just like there are definitely, when you said like the way the sun sets in this game, I immediately like just zapped in my mind to that one spot, that one locale where you just get this like gorgeous golden sunset in the city park, and you're just like, there is a love for the locale, for the time regions, for the way everything can just look picturesque in like one moment, that I think Unicorn Overlord is pretty and has moments that really shock me with its art. Like when you fight in a thunderstorm and like the lightning flashes and it kind of lights everybody up. But I will also agree that I think that's a game that's more about the character design for me. Whereas I think 13 Sentinels is just on a whole, like on a different level for its art. It is VanillaWare, like just
flexing,
throwing 100. Yeah.
I also really like the moments when you're playing one character storyline and there's stuff happening. You see other characters just in the background or the foreground having conversations and you're like, oh, hey, I know that girl and her friends. Wonder what they're up to. And they have no interaction with you in the scene and then they walk out. So it gives you a sense of being in a play or being in a living world. That I kind of enjoy, actually. So
same.
Rabble.
I can't say things, but I am just it's such a good game. It's such a well-crafted game.
I'm looking forward to the Pantheon.
So you're saying I should be paying attention to those individual moments, right?
No, I'm not saying like, oh, you'll unlock some great mystery or whatever. I just, this whole time you've been talking about all these different aspects of 13 Sentinels, and I think it makes me appreciate more having seen the end. Like, I don't know that there are many games that feel so like committed to the thing it's doing and create, like you mentioned a puzzle box or a mystery box. I think the thing I get frustrated with kind of the J.J. Abrams mystery box is that like it ends up being a lot of red herrings that just kind of draw you in different directions. You're like, so maybe the island is not an island or something like that. I don't know, but
it's a peninsula.
Yeah. I'm going to dunk on Lost for a little bit. But it's a peninsula. The thing I like about 13 Sentinels is I don't like, there are red herrings, quote unquote, but it's really just everything does end up being in service to the thing it is doing, from the art to the staging to the way that story is doled out to all the things you can do within the game, to like everything feels so interlinked in a way that is really impressive. I've heard a lot of people talk about narrative design and like kind of confusing it with just having good writing, but I think 13 Sentinels is an incredible example of narrative design because everything builds on top of itself. All of the systems are actually in play serving the narrative in a way that is really effective to go and look at. I haven't started my replay yet, but this is like really making me want to go grab my Switch and start my replay today, because I'm just sitting here like, that. This game is so good.
Well,
keep playing.
I'll keep playing, promise, and I'll give you another update next week. Also, I'm playing Persona 3 Reload. This week in Gekkoukan run continues. I streamed this past week, which was a big week because it's the first full moon event. And that was over on twitch.tv/bloodgodpod, which you should like and subscribe over there, because we stream every Saturday morning at 9:15 a.m. Pacific, at 12 p.m., 15 p.m. Eastern. But I'm going to do it again on Wednesday. Not too many additional thoughts on this one, because it's all stuff that I've experienced before. So in a lot of ways, I'm trying to get back to the parts that I remember less well, which might not be until June, but I'm enjoying returning to Persona 3 Reload and just being able to go through a lot of different stuff. That's it for the tavern. Nadia, take us home.
This is really stupid. I'm sorry, but it's just something that's been on my mind, because I on Spotify, I realized, I love The Killers, and they released a compilation album. So I said, okay, cool, I'm going to listen to this. And then I remember the song Human. Are we human or are we dancer? Dancer. And here's the thing.
Is that from, like, third album?
I think it was A Day and Age, so yes, it was the one with Space. That was a weird album. I kind of like it, but it's also not my favorite. But anyway, at the time when this song came out, I was working as a pet groomer, and one of the groomers I worked with was this Ukrainian lady who had come to Canada after the fall of the Soviet Union and all that. And her English was perfectly fine, but she obviously didn't really get some of the nuances. And then she asks me, Nadia, what is it, human or dancer? And I got so angry at myself because I'm like, I don't know. That's just a really weird lyric that this asshole made up. And so I'm trying to explain to this. It's kind of like people knew at that point that I was a writer and I was grooming at the time. And so they asked me this question about the nuance of English. And I'm like, I don't know, because human or dancer doesn't mean anything. And then I go to the Killers concert, and because human and dancer became a freaking meme. And I went to the Killers concert, and they did, are we human or are we dancer? And there's, like, all this meme shit up on the walls. And I'm like, no, you don't get to turn this into a meme. This is a stupid lyric. Stop it. Just stop. I know Killers, like, as much as I love them, sometimes their lyrics are like, what the frick are you even saying, Brandon Flowers? I don't understand you.
Not allowed to be self-aware.
He's self-aware, I'll give him that. And very good live, actually. I definitely recommend seeing the Killers live. But yeah, that just made me so angry that I was, like, asked to explain what this meant, and I'm just like, as helpless as you are, child, I have no idea.
Trying to explain someone who's a non-native speaker a bad song lyric, what a nightmare.
It was absolutely a nightmare, and I kind of had to apologize and say, look, I don't know. Sometimes
I apologize for my people and my language.
I apologize for Brandon Flowers.
I apologize for that time that he said that he was the next Bob Dylan or whatever. Or no,
did he say that?
Oh my god!
He said that he was the next. Who's the guy from New Jersey? His whole second album was just a giant tribute to that guy from New Jersey who's really popular.
Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen. Oh. Thank you.
He called himself the next Springsteen. Oh. Yeah, that
he
was.
He was the next Springsteen. I was like, dude.
I actually don't like Samstown very much. That's controversial, but I've just not.
I enjoyed Samstown.
Samstown has some songs.
It has
on
bad
it,
lyrics. It's a bad lyrics.
It's a bad lyrics.
That's
but...
what gets me. Like, I love Bling, Confession of a King, but that those lyrics, like, well, I don't even know what's going on. But yeah, I like some of the songs off it. Like, I'm not a soldier. That one's pretty good.
No, that's Hot Fuss. That was a Hot Fuss song.
Is that Hot Fuss?
It sounds like a Samstown song. Samstown was like when we were young. And I forgot what the other big hit off of Samstown was. It might have been Samstown.
Like Jesus, buddy, talks like a gentleman. Dustland Fairy Tale, I think, was off. Was that Hot Fuss or was that?
That might have been the third album.
I actually really, really like the song "Read My Mind." That's a good song, and that's off the.
That's definitely
album.
A later one, I think, because "Hot Fuss" was somebody told me, "Mr. Brightside, smile like you mean it," and all these like things that I've done. That album,
somebody
slaps.
That's 20 years old this year. Somebody
told me. Uh-huh.
I remember the first time I heard that. I was walking in the really awful heat to deliver a job resume that went nowhere. And I'm just like listening to this for the first time. I'm like, this is really freaking good. And then I finally got a job. And that's when they released Mr. Brightside. And I was listening to that on the way home from work. And I'm like, this is going to be huge. And apparently it's the number one song in Britain now.
I remember hearing Boulevard of Broken Dreams at one point, like the first time I heard it. And I was like, this song is amazing. This is incredible.
I was actually the first time
Green
I heard
Day,
that song.
Making Green the Day song of a generation.
But then I heard it like 5,000 more times, and
I was
like,
yeah. Okay, go away. I remember the first time I heard that song. That was interesting because something went wrong with my contact lenses at work. I was still a pet groomer, so I probably got hair or something under them. I just like had to take them off, and I am blind without any sort of contact vision correction. So I am trying to get home on the bus, which you would think that you would know your route, even if you were blind. But no, it's harder than you think. And I was listening to Boulevard of Broken Dreams, and I'm like, well, I'm goddamn blind, but it's a rocking ass song.
Nadia, you have the same brain thing as me, where you have like, you associate moments in time with a song.
Oh,
like
absolutely.
Like you can specific. Okay, yeah,
I do that with video games all the time. Like, to me, Stormblood is absolutely like bam, right in the summer of 2020. I can see it, I can smell it, I can touch it.
I mean, I only owned like three or four albums ever, because mm-hmm. I was not a big CD music person. I didn't really get into music until MP3 started to come around.
That's fair. It's a lot easier.
I was an early adopter of Napster and whatnot.
Yeah.
But Napster, I did own American Idiot and listened to it about 1,000 times, honestly. And I very strongly associate that with the summer of 2004 when I was working my job in college.
Yeah.
And we were all talking about that damn album. It was the song of a generation, Nadia.
I actually love 20th Century Breakdown. I know nobody likes it, but that's actually my favorite Green Day album. Yeah. I know it's crazy to hear.
I don't know if I'd say that. Like,
I don't care.
It's Dookie number one for me. I grew up listening to Dookie. Dookie,
I guess, is the automatic number one, but I'm going to definitely...
Dookie is the automatic number one, yep.
Because what's the name of that? Do you have the time to listen? I mean, that's
to
a freaking classic.
To me, wine. Basket Case, yeah.
Out of the American Idiot album, I liked Holiday a lot.
Holiday's a good song.
That really places it in a particular point in time.
That was the Iraq War, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone was very angry.
And at that time, Holiday felt subversive to have a major label directly calling out the president after the Dixie Chicks, I think the same year that the Dixie Chicks got canceled for doing that. So,
all right.
Yeah. Maybe the year after.
Not
or so.
Ready to make nice, not ready to back down.
What a time.
That's a great album.
What a time to be alive. And that's it. For this week's episode of Acts of the Blood God, thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for the generous support of our patrons. If you enjoy the show, please go check us out at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. $1 a month gets you access ad-free, and also to our Discord. Thanks so much to our Stars of Destiny, who get access to our pre-show and our post-show. This week, we're joined by Anthrax Bees, Criminal Justice, one of our mods, True RWX, Flashback 2012, Harvest Lunatic, Laguna Matata, 124, Mick Gregg, Spoonie Man, BR, and Spyrus. Thank you so much. We'll see you just a few moments in the post show over on the Discord. Remember, we do this every single Saturday at 9:15 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Where we stream our weekly show. Go check us out on Twitch at twitch.tv/bloodgodpod. We'll be back. And
tomorrow, do not forget, Sunday. Time trials are over, but the Esper quest begins tomorrow, 9 a.m. Pacific, right here on twitch.tv/bloodgodpod and on VODs on YouTube later. The Esper quest. We are starting our my FF6 first time playthrough live on stream, so stick around for that.
We need to do covers on YouTube for those. Yes, Esper quest, and we're gonna do a special, right?
Yeah,
we are doing a special for Chrono Trigger, where we're just gonna get on, maybe have like a guest or something, and just talk about how cool Chrono Trigger is, because Chrono Trigger is really freaking cool.
I look forward to that. Maybe we'll be doing that this week. So please look forward to that. In the meantime, we'll be back next week, as always, to talk about the genre of love. But until then, for Naughty Eric myself, thanks for listening. Happy adventuring. Cut the cord. Are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital. My hands are cold, and I'm on my knees looking for the answer. Let's keep going.